This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 12th of June, 2015. Hello and a warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending Friday the 12th of June 2015, which this week has been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. I am Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for your usual presenter, this time Keith Vincent, who I am disgusted to report is sunning himself in France at the moment. Your other readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And John Reagan.
Hello.
Now, if you'd like to skip to any particular item on the recording, you can press the forward button on the top of your player to move on to another track. The three main headlines from the Hampshire Chronicle this week are major recovery in waiting times, housing vital, says Civic Chief, and £10 million new gateway. So, Nicky, if you could start us off, please, on the first story, which is major recovery in waiting times, which I think is probably quite a clever play on words.
95% in A and E seen within 4 hours. Health chiefs have hailed a dramatic improvement in waiting times at Winchester A and E after they met a key target for the first time since autumn. Last week was the first since October when Royal Hampshire County Hospital met a national target of seeing 95% of A&E patients within 4 hours, says Hampshire Hospital's Chief Executive Mary Edwards. Failure to hit similar targets, including ambulance handover and treatment referral times, cost the Trust more than £1.6 million this year across Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover hospitals. It's good news that we hit the target last week, Ms. Edwards said. That's a measure that things are definitely improving. It has certainly improved dramatically over the last few weeks. Our staff have done fantastically through a really difficult period. She added, I get lots and lots of feedback from patients and their families who often start their emails or letters by saying, I felt I had to write and say thank you because your staff were brilliant. It comes after a crisis in January which saw operations postponed and patients treated in corridors. Around 80 patients are still bed-blocking at the RHCH at any one time because of a shortage in social care places, Ms. Edwards said. Hospital chiefs hope to discharge the remaining patients within the next month. We are very reliant on being able to find appropriate placements for these elderly patients who, at the moment, we can't get out of hospital, she said. The problem for social care, which funds a lot of this, is finding the placements and finding the carers. They are very focused and working hard on it, but none of us have found any magic bullet solutions yet. The Trust finished the financial year £3.9 million in debt, with staff costs overrunning by £8.9 million. Ms. Edwards hopes to boost nurse recruitment and eradicate dependency on agency staff, who cost £3.9 million this year, compared with £700,000 last year. Meanwhile, emerging plans for £150 million new emergency hospital in North Waltham are in their final design stage. Ms. Edwards said, the numbers show that this is the most cost-effective and the best clinical solution. It's both of those, and it has to be. The only concern, she said, is securing a loan to fund the build. The Trust hopes to use the internal NHS bank, but has hired financial experts to draw up a plan B of using a private lender if public money is squeezed.
Housing vital, says Civic Chief. Winchester's new civic leader has said a bus station and cut-rate housing are now, quote, essential aims, unquote, of the £150 million Silver Hill development. Councillor Stephen Godfrey has committed to building a city central centre scheme, including elements which had until recently been scrapped. He also appeared to pour cold water on alternative drawings commissioned by conservation group Save Britain's Heritage. stressing the council should only think about options currently on the table. Silver Hill's bus station and discount flats were controversially dropped in 2014 by developer TH Real Estate, then known as Henderson, because they were said to make the scheme financially unviable. Now the developer is working to restore these elements as part of a project approved in 2009, despite question marks over whether Stagecoach will agree to run a new station. In a statement issued on Tuesday, Councillor Godfrey said the crucial issue, and one that should guide our discussions, is whether any given scheme is the best for Winchester. This means a scheme that regenerates a run-down part of the city, provides affordable housing and retail opportunities, caters for public transport, delivers appropriate architecture, improves the public realm, and, importantly, can be funded. For many years, redevelopment of the rundown Silver Hill area has included elements such as the bus station and affordable housing, replacement of existing retail space and car parking, as well as improvements to the public realm and retention of a city centre GP practice, he added. I believe that most people think these elements remain crucial, and the council now needs to make sure that any proposal can deliver these essential aims. Councillor Godfrey said he welcomes alternative plans commissioned by Save Britain's Heritage, which add a riverside path, cut the development's height to four stories, and reimagine the current bus station as a market bazaar. The Save plans, S-A-V-E, are supported by Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who took his own council to the High Court over the scheme earlier this year. However, Councillor Godfrey added, this is not about whether one possible scheme is better than another. The only matter that the council needs to think about is what options exist right now to meet today's needs. I welcome all contributions to the debate, but I make no excuses for promising that I and my cabinet colleagues will urge council to consider the whole Silver Hill site and all the reasons for developing it, which include public transport, support for the local economy, and practical issues of affordability and timescale, alongside matters of aesthetics and housing. Save backed the 1990s campaign to save Peninsula Barracks, when the City Council initially proposed that most of the Victorian building be demolished. Last week, Councillor Godfrey said he thought construction could start this year.
£10 million new gateway. Residents got their first glimpse of how a £10 million student housing block could usher visitors through the, quote, gateway to Winchester. Early plans went on show last weekend for a 5- and 6-storey development for up to 280 Winchester University students next to the city's railway station. Developer Osborne hopes to build up to 60 flats on the former Hunt's Food Service warehouse off Andover Road. The plans and CGI images are likely to change, according to the development director. City councillors are lobbying developer Osborne to turn a run-down strip of land next to the Hunt's site into a footpath to the station overpass. Councillor Liz Hutchinson said, "At present it's dirty, derelict and absolutely foul. This is a wonderful opportunity, but it's important that we get it right. Personally, I think it's the gateway to Winchester, so it needs to be designed from both front and back. People groan about Woking and they groan about Basingstoke, and we want to show people that Winchester is rather special." Around 50 people attended the exhibition at St Paul's Church on Friday and Saturday. Davis Sarson, Osborne's development director, said the plans would change after initial feedback, with a possible cut in capacity to about 250 students. Concerns were raised at the meeting about the development's height. Osborne says the project would house second and third year students, keeping as many freshers as possible on campus, and importantly, easing pressure on city estates. Tensions have risen in neighbourhoods like Stanmore as housing shortages push more scholars into renting privately. But one of Winchester's top businessmen has expressed concern at the prime commercial site being used only for housing. Stephen Gates, who's managing director of Denplan and chairman of Hampshire's Chamber of Commerce Winchester Area Committee, said, "When we submitted a response to the City Council consultation on their local plan, which was done last year, one of the issues that we raised was the lack of available space for business, whether that's business growth, business expansion or new business. We have a general concern about the allocation of space in the city to housing versus business. We understand there's a need for balance for both, and we know that Winchester is a popular city to live in, and with a growing student population, there's going to be more demand for housing." City chiefs hope major proposals to redevelop the wider station approach will provide much-needed office space. Winchester City backs the proposals. Deputy Vice-Chancellor Neil Marriott said, "The proposed scheme is well located, less than a mile from our King Alfred campus and West Downs, as well as being close to the city centre. Additionally, students housed here would be under the supervision of robust operational management to ensure good neighbourliness. Osborne is working on an outline planning application to Winchester Council to launch the site in 2018.
Thank you, John. Well, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices, and then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, question and answer, historical items, chronicle comment on Alison's column, letter from Westminster, Belgarum What's On, and lighting up times. First, we have the death notices. Chaffee, Brian Leonard Chaffee, known as Chiefy, peacefully, 2nd of June, aged 78.
Lawrence, Dr. Malcolm Lawrence, previously orthopaedic surgeon at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, 31st of May, after a long illness.
Marshall, Sheila Marshall, née Jenkins, formerly of Fox Lane, Stanmore, in hospital, 4th of June.
Pratton, Irene Pratton, peacefully on the 30th of May.
Quick, Peter Quick, peacefully, 1st of June, aged 83.
Salvage, Aubrey Salvage, peacefully.
Stokes, Frank Stokes, 4th of June, aged 90.
Trimmer, Patricia Trimmer, peacefully on the 7th of June, aged 81.
Well, we now have letters to the editor. Now, it's a complete mixed bag this week. I think there are 9 letters on 9 different subjects. So, Nikki, could we have the first letter, please?
From Sally Collins, Cinnamon Trust. Help walk dog. Sir, the Cinnamon Trust is the only specialist national charity for the terminally ill and people in their later years and their much-loved, much-needed companion animals. We urgently need dog-walking volunteers in the Overton area for a lovely 8-year-old Jack Russell, who would love to go for a good walk. Elderly or ill pet owners become very worried about their ability to care for their pets, feeling that their only option is to rehome them. This is where our national network of dedicated volunteers step in to offer support, enabling them to stay together. If anyone can help, please call during office hours, 01736 758 707, or via email volunteer@cinnamon.org.uk, and there's also a website, www.cinnamon.org.uk, and that's from Sally Collins, the Cinnamon Trust Appeal Administrator.
This one's headed Might Isn't Right, and it's from Frank Williams, who lives in Morstead Road, Winchester. So Keith Story's reasoning letters, June the 4th, could be described as all at sea, but the might is right ethos, which has evolved for land transport, bears no resemblance to maritime tradition, where steam gives way to sail. His personal anecdotes of close calls with cyclists and pedestrians paint a distorted picture of the general situation. Some years ago, Mr. Storey spearheaded a campaign opposing the St. Catherine's Park and Ride project, supposedly on environmental grounds. Did I misunderstand his motives? Was he actually championing the right of the motorist to burn through the city centre, while those choosing healthy, eco-friendly transport modes bear the onus for road safety? Regardless of our chosen means of getting from A to B, we're all flawed human beings, subject to occasionally mental momentary lapses in concentration. Given the human condition, the lethal potential of the motor car far exceeds that of the bicycle or Shanks's pony. In an ideal world, cars, bicycles and pedestrians would be segregated from one another, and thousands of miles of bike and boot-free motorway are available where hydrocarbon junkies may give free expression to their Clarksonian instincts. But where urban layout forbids segregation, motorists should stop whinging, lift their right foot, and be prepared to use the other pedal from time to time. Frank Williams, Morstead Road, Winchester.
And here's a letter from a chap in Kent who's unearthed a very important local fact and wants help recording it. Sir, I'm writing to you at your newspaper in my capacity as an amateur, yet very experienced and well-informed historical researcher. I'm hoping that some organisation or individual within your readership may be interested in one of my recent discoveries in the world of Saxon history. My two main topics that I've covered recently are, first, the true and original meaning of King Alfred's fable legend of the burning of the cakes, with the identity of the original compiler revealed, plus the reasons and motives as to why he composed the fable originally. And second, the true identity and genealogical background to Bishop or Saint Aldhelm, a hero of King Alfred, finally uncovered and explained properly. His works were stored at Winchester Cathedral, by the way. The Alfred legend has been preserved as a legendary enigma or riddle parable until my eureka moment of discovery on May Day 2014. At present, I am the only Englishman to know and understand the truth of King Alfred's burnt cakes, as far as I am aware to date. My main problem is that all of my work is bogged down in pen and ink, much of it in rough, draft, handwritten form, as I've not yet entered the world of computers fully at this stage, and I lack the financial resources to gain either the appropriate training or the necessary equipment, plus my necessary and general lack of fitness to boot. I thought perhaps the Winchester Writers' Festival, hosted by the University of Winchester from June the 19th to the 21st, and now in its 35th year, would be of assistance to someone in my position. Since being in profound ill health, I do have serious fears that my research may remain unpublished. I feel I'm holding a precious nugget of our Saxon cultural heritage, and yet struggle to find both the home for my work and the wherewithal to implement into a neat and coherent form. Any suggestions would be much appreciated by calling me on 020 8300 3290. And that's from Stephen Buller, who lives in Sidcup in Kent.
NHS experience. This is from Ron Owen, Wickmark. Sir, I have recently had major heart surgery and am now recovering. So I felt my recent experience of the NHS might be of value both to politicians and to those responsible for hospital management. Let me say, first of all, that those who love to describe our health service as failing or in crisis, come and see. See the quality and the dedication of skilled people, and in particular the team of experts who saved my life. From my GP's initial diagnosis, through the cardiac teams who swiftly gather the evidence and brought in one of the top heart surgeons in the country, a terrifying process of open heart surgery was completed with amazing skill, minimum visible scars and no pain. All this in just over 2 months and free at the point of delivery. My sister, who did her nurse training in the 1960s, reminded me that when she started, there was no such thing as heart surgery. Where else could I envisage comparable service? Since the operation, I have been systematically monitored. That is my base case. When I needed skilled medics, they were there for me, and they delivered. Are there areas for improvement? Of course. But it is totally unhelpful to use generalisations which offer sticks to people with an agenda. Much more useful to home in on specific areas. You can actually do something about an overcrowded A&E by adding resources or altering the pattern of demand, about the behaviour of drunks, about ward systems which still appear to be organised for the benefit of staff rotas. Does the jab in the bum need to be administered at 5:30 a.m? Or the walk with the physio at 6:30 a.m? These are nothing to do with the validity of Nye Bevan's concept, and certainly no reflection on the skills of the ward team. They are a product of a management culture, which for years has made assumptions about the patient's proper place and a failure to recognise the importance of keeping them informed. I find it incomprehensible that, for some politicians, profit is incompatible with healthcare. I guess that might just possibly rule out my surgeon. Our NHS is about free delivery at the point of need. The NHS must be free to use whichever organisations will deliver to quality and cost criteria. Cries of creeping privatisation are absurd unless there is evidence of a shift from this fundamental principle. The only ward I found to be totally unacceptable in terms of quality was appalling. If I was contracted as a private business responsible for the two members of staff on night duty, they would not be on the payroll the next day. This is the strength of private business culture and big problem with which much of the public sector culture of cover-up and non-accountability. If you scour the NHS, you will find material for the media. If you lie here as a patient, grateful for the skills that saved your life, I guarantee you'll feel different. And that's Ron Owen at Wickmark, Winchester.
This is from Mike Kennedy of Pine Close, South Wanston. Sir, on Friday, June the 5th, it was 40 years since the British people had a vote on our membership of the European Union. Now we're promised another referendum by David Cameron. But will it be fair? Already there is talk that the EU referendum bill may be amended to allow about 1.5 million non-British citizens a vote on the future of our nation on the grounds that they are EU citizens who live here. Of course, if EU nationals who've come to the UK have taken the trouble to gain British citizenship, then they deserve to have a vote. If they've lived in the UK for donkey's years but have kept their Italian or Spanish citizenship, then they don't. There is also the suggestion that the vote would exclude military personnel and many other British people temporarily overseas. It is also a concern that the bill makes no provision for a purdah period to stop the government unfairly interfering in the referendum campaign. None of these things would be fair. Worse, they would be dangerous. If these ideas are adopted, they will call into question the legitimacy of the referendum. If David Cameron, his ministers or the Lords take us down the road of giving EU nationals a vote in the EU referendum, it tells us the vote will be a sham, and they have no confidence they can win it without gerrymandering the result. Mike Kennedy, Pineclose, South Wanston.
And now Adrian Bates writes from Mitchell Dever with a letter headed Important Truth. Sir, Mr. Anderson's letter headed Secondary Issue on June the 4th raises truly important issues, but manages to confuse at the same time. Behind the climate change and green movements is an important truth, a truth that those of us dwelling in glorious Hampshire are somewhat shielded from. Our prodigal use of the planet's finite resources is rising at an unsustainable rate. Attempting to deliver a more extravagant lifestyle to an ever-increasing population. Those who objectively draw attention to this are not advising that we return to cave dwelling, subsisting on nuts and berries. Rather than denying the concrete fact, Society needs to acknowledge them and look to use our innovative and cooperative skills to develop achievable and high-quality lifestyles by doing more with less, much less. That we can do this is exemplified by lighting improvements, for example, where the latest technologies deliver superior lighting some 40 to 50 times more energy efficiently than 20 years ago. Mocking those who see the dangers but have yet to articulate adequate answers serves no one well.
And this from Peter Hargreaves, added Vote Due to Fear. Sir, before Steve Bryan gets carried away with the size of his increased election majority, he should reflect, although he won't, that the big increase in the Tory vote was entirely due to fear. Electors around the country were alarmed at the prospect of the SNP sharing government with Labour and were determined to prevent it. Having secured his seat for the next 5 years, he should now come off the fence and tell us if he supports his government's latest round of cuts, impacting mostly on defence. He's probably too young to understand that Britain went through all this before when a Tory government and Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain failed to prepare for Britain's defence. Putin should not be misjudged. He is not playing games. Mr. Bryan should tell his constituents if he supports further defence cuts, and while he is communicating with us, he should tell us what he intends to do with his £7,000 MP's salary increase. And that from Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Hyde, Winchester.
John Harris of Uplands Road, Winchester, proclaims flash mob fun. Sir, something different. Many older people like me, living alone, who own a computer, might like to look at flash mobs. Here is a real joy of music and dance of all ages and nationalities from all parts of the world. Some of the examples being Les Miserables, Ode to Joy, Ravel's Bolero, Irish Dancers, and much, much more. It lifts my heart just watching the sheer exuberance of the participants. What a dream it would be if Winchester could provide its own flash mob. Schools, various organisations, indeed any groups, might like to try hard work, but enormous fun. Why not have a go, says John Harris, Uplands Road, Winchester.
Jeff Naylor. His letter is headed, Major Commodity That Is Money. Sir, a London banker wakes up in his Victorian house, has his United States cereal breakfast, puts on his Chinese tailored suit, walks on pavements laid by Victorian workmen to catch the 707 German-built train to a mainline Victorian station. He takes the tube to the city, enters the office, sits down at his Korean-made computer and proceeds to number crunch all day. This on an above-average salary paid out of bank proceeds from mis-selling, international financial rigging and ultimately paid by everyone in the cost of goods and services. My point being that money should value what we do and make and only be a minor subservient element in a successful economy and not a major commodity in its own right. We have more benefit from those Victorian pavements than we have from bankers, and a reduction by HSBC will benefit us all, even those made redundant, if they choose to obtain worthwhile jobs.
The Hampshire Chronicle has an occasional item called Question and Answer, in which they ask a local person about their local area. This week it's the turn of Laura Ward, owner of Brides in Winchester, Upper High Street, who says why she loves this vibrant city. I'll ask the questions and Nikki will give Laura's responses. So, what's your favourite restaurant or cafe?
Barista for my coffee. The restaurant depends on my mood. If I want Asian, I'll go to Tanoshi, but if I want French, I like Brasserie Blanc. I also really like greens.
And your favourite pub or bar?
Number 5 Bridge Street. It's so diverse and just fab. I also like the Black Boy.
And your favourite shop?
My own, of course. I also like the little gift shops down in the square.
What's your favourite view?
On a Saturday or Sunday morning, the top of the high street, looking down into the city before anyone's really around. It is also my favourite time of the day.
And what's your favourite building?
The Tudor building, Jack Wills in the high street. I love all the black and white together. It's so very pretty. The Great Hall is also lovely.
And in your opinion, who or what is Winchester's biggest icon?
Everything revolves around the cathedral. Even if you're not religious, it's the glue that holds it all together.
And Winchester's best-kept secret?
A picnic in the water meadows.
OK. And the best thing about Winchester?
The friendliness of the other businesses around here. The diversity of its visitors. I love walking around and hearing the different languages.
And the worst?
Parking. I see people carrying loads of things and wish there was easier parking nearby. The park and ride is great, but when it's closed, it's a real problem.
If there's one thing you could change about the city, what would it be?
Doing something creative with all the empty shops while they're waiting for new tenants. It really brings down the whole atmosphere.
And can you describe Winchester in a sentence?
A vibrant, friendly and diverse city which is a haven for so many interesting places.
Thank you. The Hampshire Chronicle has an occasional item called Question and Answer, in which they ask a local person about their local area. This week it's the turn of Laura Ward, owner of Brides in Winchester, Upper High Street, who says why she loves this vibrant city. I'll ask the questions and Nikki will give Laura's responses. So, what's your favourite restaurant or cafe?
Barista for my coffee. The restaurant depends on my mood. If I want Asian, I'll go to Tanoshi. But if I want French, I like Brasserie Blanc. I also really like greens.
And your favourite pub or bar?
Number 5 Bridge Street. It's so diverse and just fab. I also like the Black Boy.
And your favourite shop?
My own, of course. I also like the little gift shops down in the square.
What's your favourite view?
On a Saturday or Sunday morning, the top of the high street, looking down into the city before anyone's really around. It is also my favourite time of the day.
And what's your favourite building?
The Tudor building, Jack Wills, in the high street. I love all the black and white together. It's so very pretty. The Great Hall is also lovely.
And in your opinion, who or what is Winchester's biggest icon?
Everything revolves around the cathedral. Even if you're not religious, it's the glue that holds it all together.
And Winchester's best-kept secret?
A picnic in the water meadows.
OK. And the best thing about Winchester?
The friendliness of the other businesses around here. The diversity of its visitors. I love walking around and hearing the different languages.
And the worst?
Parking. I see people carrying loads of things and wish there was easier parking nearby. The park and ride is great, but when it's closed, it's a real problem.
If there's one thing you could change about the city, what would it be?
Doing something creative with all the empty shops while they're waiting for new tenants. It really brings down the whole atmosphere.
And can you describe Winchester in a sentence?
A vibrant, friendly and diverse city which is a haven for so many interesting places.
Thank you. Well, now we go on to historical items. And we're back to Nikki, please, with 25 years.
June the 8th, 1990. Eastleigh councillors cleared the way last Wednesday for a massive £300 million redevelopment of Eastleigh Airport after a last-ditch bid to postpone the decision was soundly defeated. The vote came after the meeting heard that developer Peter de Savery may immediately sell on the aviation operations. The outline plans, granted planning permission by 29 votes to 7, offer a new airport passenger terminal, new railway station, parking areas, hotel, heritage centre, new link road and 280,000 square feet of business park. The applications were by Southampton Eastleigh Airport Developments Limited, a company spearheaded by millionaire de Savery. And another item. Over 60 firemen battled for the most of the Monday night to save Martine's nightclub, Market Street, in the biggest fire seen in Eastleigh town centre for several years. The alarm was raised shortly after 11 p.m. by a passing taxi driver who spotted smoke, and at the height of the blaze, the flames could be seen all over Eastleigh. A junior disco had been held in the nightclub earlier in the evening, but the building had been empty for about an hour by the time the fire was discovered.
50 years ago, June the 12th, 1965... British Railways announced yesterday, Friday, that it is planned to withdraw passenger train services between Southampton Central, Totten and Forley stations from September the 6th. If the proposal is approved, the stations at Marchwood, Hythe, Hardley Holt and Forley will close, except for freight traffic at Hythe and Forley. Public notices were being put up yesterday in the Bournemouth, Southampton, Portsmouth and Salisbury areas. Anyone wishing to object to the proposal should contact the Secretary to the South Eastern Area Transport Users Consultative Committee, 3-4 Great Marlborough Street, London, W1, by July the 31st. There's another very different piece. A warning for Christians to beware of false cults was given at a Scripture Union rally in Winchester Guildhall on Thursday evening by Leith Samuel, the pastor of Southampton's Above Bar Church. And it quotes, "Today on our doorsteps we are asked to make many decisions," he said, "and are up against a menace from Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons and the like, false cults in our island home," end of quote. "But he asked those present to adhere to the teaching of Christianity that they had known from childhood and to continue in God's ways. To a crowded sessions hall, he explained the ability of the Bible, quote, "It doesn't need revising like Whitaker's Almanac or Wisden," unquote.
Now here are a couple of accounts of wartime bravery dated June the 12th, 1915. Firstly, information has been received by Mr. and Mrs. W. Henning of Chesil Street, Winchester, that one of their sons, First Class Petty Officer P. Henning, was instrumental in saving the life of an able seaman. On May the 20th at 6:30 a.m, this young sailor fell overboard. Petty Officer Henning dived over after him and was seen to be in difficulties owing to the strong tide and undercurrent. Another seaman then came to his assistance, and between them they managed to help the first man afloat. The captain of the ship subsequently mustered the ship's company on the quarterdeck and warmly congratulated the two men on their plucky action. And the second piece is about the war in the air. The Secretary of the Admiralty makes the following announcement. At 3 a.m. today, Flight Sub-Lieutenant R.A.J. Warnford, R.N., attacked a Zeppelin in the air between Ghent and Brussels at 6,000 feet. He dropped 6 bombs, and the airship exploded, fell to the ground and burnt for a considerable time. The force of the explosion turned the Moran monoplane upside down. The pilot succeeded in righting the machine, but had to make a forced landing in the enemy's country. However, he was able to restart his engine and return safely to his aerodrome.
And 200 years ago was June the 12th, 1812. If we may credit the intelligence from Brussels, brought by the Dutch and Flanders mails received yesterday morning, there was no expectation of the immediate commencement of hostilities on the side of the Allies. The Prussian army, under Blücher, has lately received the reinforcement of 10,000 men. The force, under the orders of this gallant veteran, is represented as the most formidable that Prussia ever brought into the field. On the enemy's line, a general movement has taken place. The insurrection in the west is spreading, and the nature of its extent may be conjectured when it is acknowledged that an army of 25,000 men were dispatched to suppress it. And the second item is, on Monday night, an unfortunate woman, in a state of intoxication, fell overboard from His Majesty's ship Pomum, lying in the harbour, and was picked up insensible after several minutes had elapsed, in consequence of the difficulty of rescuing her, she having fallen between two ships. She was conveyed to the Row Barge Public House on the Common Hard, which is one of the receiving houses of the Humane Society, where the most approved means were resorted to, which were persevered in for 2 hours, and the poor woman providentially recovered. We now have Christian comment, which this week is written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy and is headed, "Get an Eternal Perspective on Your Petty Concerns." And this is read by John.
Yes, the Reverend Kennedy begins with a quotation from the musical Porgy and Bess. the things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. As a teacher, I had no Christian connections, but I was immediately fascinated. Who and what were they singing about? I was particularly intrigued by another part of the song, Jonah, he lived in the whale. And the fact that the song denied that the whole of Jonah and the whale was history. To me, this made the story more interesting. Why would a faith narrative be historically unbelievable? Faith inspires beyond the historical or the rational because it engages with something elemental within each one of us, what the Christian tradition sometimes calls the soul. The story of Jonah is not about whether a man can live for 3 days in the belly of a huge fish. It's about how we live our lives, how we're called to go beyond knee-jerk reactions and how we engage with the ground of our being, what a Christian calls God. In the Bible, the story begins with the Israelite Jonah being called by God to go to Israel's enemies and tell them to turn from their evil ways. Now, Jonah initially takes a tribal, narrow-minded view and flees in the opposite direction to avoid helping out his enemies. Jonah doesn't want them to turn over a new leaf to seek peace and be forgiven. He wants them to suffer God's punishment, so he boards a ship which is sailing in the opposite direction. However, it soon runs into a devastating storm, and Jonah is thrown overboard and swallowed by a great fish, hence the song. The fish literally turns things around, and Jonah is vomited out onto a beach. So the game is up for Jonah, and he accepts God's call and goes to preach to the enemy city, which, frustratingly for our prophet, turns from its evil practices and avoids punishment. This is a great story in which a giant fish undermines Jonah's prejudice and reminds us that we are called beyond a limited perspective to a place free from ignorance and vengeance. It is said that we are to live, quotes, from the perspective of the eternal, or to live our lives beyond everyday petty concerns and prejudices. The message of Jonah's story is that this eternal perspective will constantly challenge us to move beyond our own self-absorbed concerns. We can avoid the eternal for a while and head off in another direction, but we will be left with undermining doubts, a nagging feeling that life could be more fulfilling for ourselves and for those beyond our immediate neighbours. Jonah's vision was widened by a whale. I often think of him when I'm surfing. Many of us are inspired by the enormity of the brooding sea. There is something in the rising and falling of tide and wave that can call us out of ourselves towards that eternal perspective. So let's hear it for those broad sea horizons.
Editorial comment this week is headed, "Too Many Students Hitting Business." Is Winchester sleepwalking into irretrievable and harmful change? Developers want to demolish the Hunt's warehouse on Andover Road and build several blocks of six-storey housing for around 250 to 280 students. The problem is that a commercial use will be lost, and another step taken into Winchester becoming a student-stroke-commuter-stroke-tourist town. Stephen Gates, Managing Director of Denplan, is right to warn that developments such as this could undermine a balanced economy. Commercial space is in short supply, and reducing the amount will only push up rents to the detriment of young growing companies. Cities are always in flux, but the danger is that the balance is tipping too far.
Now, Ron Allison writes about Jaws, A Touch of Menace. That's read today by Nikki, please.
As a former BBC man, I have a fascination with anniversaries. Apart from anything else, they're always a good subject for a broadcast programme or, as now, a newspaper column. Stirring memories is usually interesting and quite often startling. Is it really 30 years since? Or I can't believe it was that long ago. So this week I draw your attention to the fact that it is now 40 years since the movie Jaws was first released. 40 years since that most memorable film music introduced us to the great white shark prowling in the sea off the coast of New England. Prowling? Do sharks prowl? Well, this fellow was certainly doing more than just swimming, and John Williams equally certainly got it absolutely right with his instantly scary, threatening soundtrack. I first saw the film on a flight from America some years before the introduction of individual screens for each passenger. It wasn't always easy to see or to hear, but even under those conditions, I can still recall the impact of that fatal nighttime swim. As soon as possible, I was seeing Jaws in a proper cinema, and again I was gripped. So much about this film is just right. The script, with seldom a word wasted, is more or less perfect. Much revised, apparently, from the first adaptation of Peter Benchley's novel, offered as a screenplay. It has many of the attributes of a good television programme commentary. Informative, allowing the pictures to speak for themselves whenever possible, moving the story along with a restrained subtlety. At the time, the director Steven Spielberg was still to establish himself as something of a genius. Jaws did that for him, and in terms of movies, the rest, as they say, is history. His three leading actors, Roy Schneider as the police chief, Richard Dreyfuss as the shark Boffin, called in to try to save the day, and Robert Shaw, the shark hunter, who does become the man of the moment and something of a steam sealer, each give first-class performances supported by a splendid cast. Discussing Jaws on the Today programme on Radio 4, Jim Naughty recalled the menace of the film, and that is, for me, the right word to convey that convey what, amongst so much else, is distinctive about it. A good novel waiting to be filmed, a splendid script, top-rate acting by top-rate cast, and a director who got it so right. Yes, menacing, and that music. So, 40 years on, a film that had a huge impact. If in 1975 you had told me that in 2015 the media would be paying a good deal of attention to football, I would not have been surprised. Had you said that FIFA would be making the news for all the wrong reasons, I might have wondered if it would take that long. But if you had explained that the Women's World Cup would be getting the headlines and television coverage because women's football was being taken seriously, I'm not sure I would have believed you. But that is what is happening, and it is good that it is. In some sports, track and field, tennis, swimming and hockey, for example, women have been competing at a high level for many years. But it seemed that women's football was finding it difficult to make a breakthrough. In America, soccer is played by girls at school, and the game develops for them beyond then. Now, with this year's World Cup getting good coverage across the media, the women's game in this country has the impetus and the opportunity to push for equality with men. It is now a professional sport, and the chance is here. I hope the game takes it. I suppose it will need our schools to develop girls' football if it is to effectively grow as a women's game. I would also suggest that the women do not need to follow too closely all the examples of the men. Football, without the gamesmanship, diving, time-wasting, wrestling in the penalty areas and other dark arts, will be far more attractive to watch, whether played by women or men.
Thank you. Now, letter from Westminster. This week comes from George Hollingbury, and it's read by John, please.
I'm much honoured to have been appointed a government whip with the rather grand, but thankfully not much used, title of Lord Commissioner of Her Majesty's Treasury. It's a job steeped in tradition, and it means I'm responsible for a flock of MPs, ensuring that they come to me with their concerns, whether about government business or personal issues. Talk of a black book with MPs' misdemeanors jotted down to ensure loyalty is fiction. But the whip's job is to make sure our MPs vote the right way, although that is done through gentle persuasion rather than thumbscrews. On top of this pastoral role, I also help ensure the passage of some very important legislation over the next 12 months. The European Referendum Bill, for example, is probably the central plank of the government's legislative programme, and one that will generate quite a few headlines in the months to come. It's come my way because my whip duties are attached to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, which is the government department leading on this proposed law. So my job is to organise the bill's passage through the Commons, negotiating with whips from other parties. Voting on the EU referendum bill will be a three-line whip, which is employed to force MPs' attendance at important votes. It's so named because the paper version of the vote, or whip, is underlined three times. An MP's non-attendance at such an event is taken very seriously. In effect, the whips provide the grease that oils the House. It's in some ways an old-fashioned job. For example, we count MPs in the lobby when they go to vote in just the same way as hundreds of years ago. But there is a method in this old-fashioned madness. Having to turn up in vote in person, instead of by the push of a button, means that everyone, from the Prime Minister down, has to be in the House almost daily. And that means that the humble backbencher is always able to collar and nail ministers at just about any time. An effective way for the executive to be scrutinised. Finally, I feel I must explain the term whip. It's derived from a hunting phrase, whipping in, when huntsmen encourage hounds to stay with the pack. It was first used in Parliament in 1772 at a time when many MPs were fond of hunting. The Commons has thankfully changed a great deal, but of course, this tradition remains.
Thank you. Now, there's a weekly column, Belgarum, which gives us an alternative view of the news. And this starts off with the right to buy at St Cross Hospital. Nikki, please.
A beautiful photograph of St Cross as well, shown through the trees, the newly green leaves. Hundreds of Winchester council houses have been bought under the right to buy since the 1980s. But some of the city's historic jewels could be sold under emerging proposals to extend the scheme to housing association tenants, according to Councillor Martin Todd. He warned a recent meeting that parts of St John's House or the Hospital of St Cross could be eligible for right-to-buy sales, as they are owned by charities. He said part of St Cross Hospital would be subject to right-to-buy. That is a possibility.
Leafy veggie diner needed to suit tastes. New restaurants are opening in Winchester seemingly all the time. But for a city hyped as a foodie mecca, Winchester is lacking a serious vegetarian restaurant. Herbivores must wander from side salad to reheated nut burger, hoping for the occasional veggie night. Belgarum thinks a leafy diner, designed with the class and taste of the city's best, would be a roaring success.
If there was one silver lining to the austerity cloud, it was that public services would work harder to get value for money for what they were doing. But the issue of roadside maintenance makes Belgarum wonder. Recently, county council contractors have been busy on the A31 between Winchester and Aylesford. They spent hours cutting the grass on the central reservation. It looks neat, but the reasons are hard to see, apart from visual amenity. The grass didn't need to be short for safety. Meanwhile, a mile or so down the road at the junction between the A272 and the A31, drivers wanting to head east had to peer through long grass as vehicles whiz around a bend towards them at 70 miles an hour. It has since been cut. Up the road on the northbound Spitfire Link, trees are growing in front of an important directions sign, obscuring its vital message. That's a real problem for visitors. So we have the contractors acting as unnecessary park keepers on one stretch of road, whilst nearby, long grass is creating a real traffic hazard.
And the last item from Belgarum is headed Carlsberg Alfred statue, question mark. You may have seen in the news that Portsmouth's Spinnaker Tower could soon be painted red. The sponsorship deal with airline Emirates is set to raise £3.5 million for the city's cash-strapped council. But in these times of austerity, how could Winchester make the most of its historical monuments? Sites like the Great Hall should always be protected from corporate costume, no matter the money on offer, but there are some spots ripe for minor rebranding. What about the Carlsberg King Alfred statue. If only Carlsberg did heritage. Now, lighting up times for the coming week. Now, as we're approaching Midsummer's Day, the time's very, very little. So, with the sun will be rising at about 4:50 a.m. and setting at 9:20 p.m. Now, perhaps you'd like to know about some of the activities taking place in the next week or so. Nikki, could you start with your first item, please?
Saturday, June the 13th, William Shakespeare. Much Ado About Nothing. Wolvesey Gardens, The Bishop's Palace, Winchester, SO23-9ND, 7:30pm. Rain or Shine Theatre. Please bring your own low-back chairs or rug. Duration of performance approximately 2 hours 30 minutes, including 20-minute interval. Gates normally open 1 hour before performance, and as a telephone number, 07774 852 644, and a website www.rainorshine.co.uk.
Exploring Gardens is my little selection. Sunday and Wednesday, and June the 14th and the 24th, The Thatched Cottage, Church Road, Upper Farringdon, Alton. South from 16th century thatched cottages, lawn and borders blend into informal areas of perennial and shrub planting, vegetables, fruit and wildflowers surrounding gypsy caravan. The timing is 2 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. on Sunday and 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Wednesday. Combined admission with Berry Cottage next door is £5. Plants for sale and teas are available. Wednesday, June 17th, Dean House, Kilmerston. 7 acres hidden beside the elegant facade of its Georgian centrepiece. Mixed and herbaceous borders, rose garden, pond garden and working walled gardens. 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Admission is £6. Plants for sale and again teas. Thursday and Sunday, June the 18th and the 21st, Stockbridge Gardens in Stockbridge. 4 gardens open this year, variety of styles and character. Tucked in behind the High Street is Trout Cottage. Little Wyke is also on the High Street, next to the Town Hall. New for 2015 is Old Swan House at the east end of the High Street. Shepherd's House is 50 yards east of the White Hart roundabout. Opening hours 2 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Combined admission £6. And again, plants for sale and teas. And there's one other. Sunday, June the 14th, David Austin designed Rose Garden at Shaft Farm, West Meon. GU32-1LU from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. in aid of Rosemary Foundation Hospice Charity. Admission is £5. Children are free. Refreshments and plants for sale. www.rosemary-foundation.org.uk.
Now here's some news of a fresh initiative around the Hat Fair. Organisers behind the UK's longest running Streets Arts Festival held in Winchester are looking for students and graduates for its new fringe event. Hat Fair is launching its first ever fringe festival, which will take place in the Brooks Centre on July the 3rd to the 4th to showcase the best undergraduate and recent graduate work in outdoor performance. It's being sponsored by the University of Winchester, which, as a close collaborator and supporter of the Hat Fair, runs the only street arts Bachelor of Arts degree course in the country. Participants are invited to apply or to take part in static shows or walkabout performances of 30 to 45 minutes duration. Successful entrants will receive a small bursary, to support production costs, and they'll be invited to take part in free professional development workshops with an exciting range of Hat Fair artists. Artistic Director Michelle Walker said, "I'm so delighted that, thanks to generous sponsorship from the university, we're able to launch the inaugural Hat Fair Fringe Festival. We hope that this will offer a really valuable showcase for local student and graduate talent and act as a springboard towards thriving performance careers. The Fringe will be the perfect place for emerging artists to try new creative ideas and for audiences to discover raw talent in the making. Anything goes, so do come along and see what's on offer." The Hat Fair runs this year from July 3rd to July the 5th and starts with a children's parade on the 3rd. For details, contact Beth Newell, the Hat Fair Fringe Festival producer, on fringe@hatfair.co.uk.
I'm afraid I missed out a couple of things. Friday, June the 19th, an evening with Julian Fellows at Pingleston Barn, Old Alsford, from 6 to 8pm, £25, including canapes and fizz, in Age UK. There's a telephone number, 01962 871 719, and that's on Friday, June the 19th. There's also a garden that I missed, a garden on show in Broughton, near Stockbridge, and there'll be 14 gardens open on Sunday, June the 21st, from 2 to 6pm, with proceeds going to improve the church.
There's a couple of exhibitions. To Wednesday, September the 30th, presumably from now, with the Rifles to Waterloo. It's the Royal Green Jackets Rifles Museum at Peninsula Barracks, Romsey Road, Winchester, SO238TS. Wellington's Defeat of Napoleon, 25 square metre model of the battlefield with 30,000 soldiers and horses. Entry fees, adults £4. Concessions for seniors, children and groups. And there's another one, Wednesday to Sunday, June the 24th to 28th, Cascades, a festival of flowers at Winchester Cathedral. Wednesday to Saturday, 9am to 8pm. Sunday, 9am to 6pm. Adults, £10. Under 16s, £5. Advanced booking recommended. And the last one is to Tuesday, June the 30th, Mother Earth, Theatre Royal Anadora Art Exhibition.
This piece is headed A Celebration of Fine Caring. Residential and nursing homes in Hampshire and across the country are opening their doors to the public for Care Home Open Day on or around Friday, June the 19th. This national initiative, now in its third year, is all about reminding people that care homes in every community are filled with unique, intelligent and charming characters and run by special people who really do care. Thousands of care homes across the UK take part each year, welcoming the public and arranging events and activities that help to create lasting links between care home residents and their local communities. This is all about showing people what excellent care homes are really all about and how they can be at the centre of local communities, developing relationships across the generations. Both Colton's Care's Winchester Homes, Abbots Barton and at St Catherine's View, are holding afternoon cream teas. Karen Burden, activities manager at the family-owned provider, said, "Visitors are quite often surprised by the vibrant, happy environment that they find in a care home. We know some people still have misconceptions, so we're keen to dispel any myths and offer the chance to come and have a look around, meet the staff and the residents." And you can find out more about the care homes taking part and how you can get involved by searching with your postcode at nationalcarehomesopenday.org.uk. And for more on activities at Colton Care Homes, visit coltoncare.co.uk.
And very quickly, Friday to Sunday, June the 19th to the 21st, Winchester Writers' Festival, University of Winchester, Three crowded days of courses, talks and activities for aspirant writers by authors, agents, publishers and writing professionals. There is a website, www.writersfestival.co.uk.
Right, now we have the general items of general news, starting with Nikki, please.
Men face trial over bogus marriage. Three men are standing trial accused of organising a sham marriage in Winchester to stay in the UK. Davina Banda, Olivier Atti, Armand de Gege deny charges of conspiracy to arrange a bogus marriage. Winchester Crown Court was told how the visa of the potential groom, Cameroonian national Abanda, was due to expire just days before he and his bride-to-be, Olivia Godfrey, were arrested at a ceremony in Winchester Registry Office on February 28, 2014. The jury was told three men and French-born Godfrey arranged the hoax to enable Abanda to apply for permanent UK residency. Prosecutor Michael Butt asked the jury to infer the existence of an agreement between the accused. Abanda had a two-year visa issued in order to attend the University of Luton, Mr. Butt said. He then applied for a post-study worker visa in 2012 until March 6, 2014. His permission to stay was about to expire at the time that the marriage took place. This will tell you what the point of this ceremony in Winchester was. During the morning of that day, a wedding party arrived at the registry office in Winchester. The party had effectively travelled down from London the night before and stayed overnight at a hotel at the service station on the M3, begging the question why these Londoners chose to be married in Winchester. All was not what it appeared in this supposedly happy event in the registry office in Winchester on that day. The jury was told how the three men stayed overnight at the Days Inn Hotel on the southbound services the previous night. Before the ceremony, they took a taxi and withdrew £2,300 in cash from the Barclays cash machine in Jury Street. Immigration officers were tipped off and swooped down on the wedding party. Mr. Butt told the hearing officers found Belgian national Atti, 31, and Djedji, 30, originally from the Ivory Coast, outside in a taxi, looking after the bags. Within the baggage, they found a number of documents, including a crib sheet giving details of the groom to the bride. The child was told that Godfrey, 22, admits conspiracy and bigamy charges. The jury was told the wedding would have been her second illegal marriage. The three men are on bail. The trial continues.
A woman has been charged with drink driving after a car containing two children flipped onto its side in a Winchester street. Tulasi Maya Rai, aged 36, was arrested after a Vauxhall Corsa was involved in a collision with two parked vehicles on Milverton Road, full flood. Two ambulance crews were called at 9:15pm on Sunday. The passengers, one adult and two children, did not need hospital treatment, an ambulance spokesman said. Rye of Highcroft Road, Winchester, was bailed to Magistrates Court on June the 30th.
This article's headed, Bikes Reclaim Roads for Popular City Race. Two Wheels ruled the roost in Winchester for its annual cycling festival and road race. Streets were closed on Sunday to allow bicycles to reclaim the streets, if only for a day. An estimated 8,000 people attended in a record turnout. The Broadway was shut to vehicles for Cycle Fest, which featured more than 20 stalls with a cycling theme. The Criterium races took place on a 1 kilometre circuit around the city centre. Winchester Criterium and Cycle Fest is becoming the biggest event of its kind in the region, and it's supported by local shops Hargrove Cycles and Montezuma's Chocolates. Councillor Frank Pearson, portfolio holder for the environment, health and well-being, said it was great to see so many people enjoying this event, which is growing in popularity each year. And that's accompanied by two pictures of very fit looking chaps cycling round the city centre.
Pink Army to march to aid cancer research. A sea of pink covered Winchester as hundreds of women raced to help cancer patients. The Race for Life was back in full force as ladies lined up for a 5-kilometre run on Sunday. Music blasted through the streets and friends and families cheered from the sidelines as emotional teams of mums and daughters, aunts, nieces and best friends were determined to cross the finish line at the bar end playing fields. The event is organised every year exclusively for women to raise money in memory of lost loved ones for Cancer Research UK. Winchester showed true girl power as more than 1,300 ladies took part in a bid to combat cancer, with the back of tops covered in the names of those who have fought the illness, slogans like "Cancer, we're coming to get you," and an abundance of pink tutus, hats, tops and even hair. The race raises millions of pounds every year when it hits cities in the UK and attracts runners of all ages, including 10-year-old Maddie Wardle from Hedge End. Maddie took some of her first steps on the Race for Life track and has now competed for her 10th race in 10 years. The Berrywood Primary School pupil ran for her dad, David, who lost his leg to a rare form of cancer 2 years ago, and she completed the race with her auntie Helen. Maddie said, "I did it for my dad. I'm really hoping to raise £300 to help people with cancer." Helen from Eastleigh added, "Maddie was great. I have been running it for 15 years since my granddad died of prostate cancer. It was emotional seeing the names of everyone's signs on their backs. We are all in it together with one aim, to raise as much money as we can to beat cancer." Race for Life was launched in 1994, and since then, millions of women and girls have raised hundreds of millions of pounds to fund research into the 200 known cancers. And there are three photographs of a lot of pink. And obviously rather a hot day, because it's not just the clothes that are pink. and pink hair, hats, you name it. Very inspiring.
A Wickham pensioner has been handed a suspended jail sentence after a motorcyclist was killed in a crash with a Land Rover. Royston Pratt, who's aged 90, of Hundred Acres, admitted causing death by driving without due care and attention after his vehicle collided with a Triumph motorbike at Staples Cross near Borant in December. The motorcyclist, Robert McQueen, aged 37, of Port Solent, died at the scene. Pratt appeared at Portsmouth Magistrates Court and was given a 16-week jail term, suspended for 12 months, and banned from driving for 5 years. He was also ordered to pay £165 costs. Sentencing, Judge Anne Arnold said, "This was not, in my opinion, a case of momentary inattention, rather an outright failure to see a motorcyclist, a vulnerable road user as defined by the sentencing guidelines, whom testing has shown would have been easily identifiable, albeit perhaps for a very short period of time. Police are encouraging elderly motorists to be safer on the road by joining the Old Drivers Forum at olddriversforum.com.
Now let's cheer things up. This article's about award-winning local beer. Cheriton-based Flower Pots Brewery has won the Hampshire Beer of the Year for a third consecutive year. Another Winchester brewery, Red Cat Brewing, made it a local double by taking second place. This year's winning beer was Peridge Pale. This 3.6% ABV beer is described by the brewery as a light straw colour with a subtle twist of citrus hop. A very refreshing beer with a perfect clean finish. The brewery also took third place in the competition with its 4.8% ABV Gooden's Gold, the beer that in fact won the contest in both 2000 and 2014. Second place went to Mr. M's Porter, which is brewed by Red Cat Brewing of Winall. The competition took place on June the 6th at Southampton Beer Festival and is run by the Southern Hampshire branch of CAMRA, the Campaign for Real Ale. The winning beers were chosen by an experienced panel of judges from the Hampshire branches of CAMRA. And the event at Southampton Guildhall is now in its 19th year and boasted around 95 real ales and more than 20 ciders and perries.
City's anti-moth technology features on the BBC. Technology designed by a Winchester firm protecting priceless relics from moths has been featured on national TV. XSX CL Tab, designed by Coldon Common-based XSX, was shown on BBC's The One Show last week during a segment on moths eating exhibitions at the Natural History Museum. The technology using pheromone-infused tablets to confuse male moths and prevent them mating has been used to preserve artefacts, including Tudor tapestries in Hampton Court Palace, robes and gowns in the Houses of Parliament, and costumes at the Royal Opera House. Widely used by conservators, it is not yet on open sale.
And this piece is, again, a more cheerful one. There's a cheerful-looking young lad striding along the bridle way. He's a Winchester schoolboy who trekked 26 miles through the countryside and has raised more than £700 for seriously ill children. He is Josh Reynolds, aged 8. He walked for 8 hours non-stop on the Clarendon Way walk and has now raised £719 for Naomi House and Jack's Place. The Year 4 pupil at Week Primary School grew determined to cover the historic trail after telling his parents he wanted to give something back. Josh felt shattered after the muddy journey from Salisbury to Winchester, but said it was amazing to raise so much for the city hospice. He said, "I felt it was worth doing it to raise charity for Naomi House to help all the disabled people," he added. Stepfather Simon Ryan, who lives with Josh in Wycombe Way, Abbots Barton, said, "Josh has recently started Cubs, and through that idea with Cubs, he's been keen to do a good deed and help people out. We're always trying to remind the children about how fortunate they are. I'd like to think his mother and I are decent people, but it's from his idea of wanting to give something back. This is a great achievement for someone so young."
Now here's more good news of local kids doing their bit to make things better for all of us. Pupils at a Winchester primary school are brightening up the city's wheelie bins and urging drivers to slow down. 2,000 colourful stickers designed by children at St Bede Primary School have been sent to homes in the city. The stickers, designed for use on wheelie bins, warn drivers of the perils of speeding in the city's centre's 20-mile-an-hour zone. A creative competition was held at the school during an Eco Day earlier this term, and the winning designs came from Thomas Duxbury in Year 2 and Rowan Batterar in Year 4. Sarah Duck, the head teacher, said, "The winning designs are colourful and striking, and they get the message across to motorists that they really need to slow down for the sake of pedestrians." St Bede School encourages pupils and parents to walk or cycle to school, and this year 94.6% of its 430 pupils walked to school. That's a rise of 1% on last year. St Bede also asks motorists to park further away from the school gates on Gordon Road to reduce the risks to its children.
Dog walking set to raise charity cash. A Winchester dog lover will parade her greyhounds through the city to promote the breed and raise money for retired race dogs. Kate Middlebrook will take her dogs Tucker, Diamond and Saffron to the streets on June the 21st and is inviting friends to join. It comes as part of the Great British Greyhound Walk, seeing owners walk their dogs across parks, woods, beaches and towns across the country. Ms Middlebrook is fundraising for the Retired Greyhound Trust, a charity which finds home for former race dogs. She said, "The Winchester Walk starts at the County Arms in Rumsey Road. There is free parking, an alternative short route for anyone not able or wanting to go too far, and a cafe en route. The Great British Greyhound Walk had 3,370 hounds walking in the UK last year and over 500 abroad, and it is an amazing chance to raise the profile of the RGT. The walk starts at 10 a.m. and will also feature a raffle. And a number if you want it, 07546 111149.
Winchester's new mayor returned to her roots on Saturday for a garden party celebrating the revamp of a city creche. Councillor Angela Clear joined children, parents and friends of Maple's Day Nursery to launch its new playrooms, garden and fort. The preschool in Hatherley Road now boasts areas for bug hunting, mud pie making and play construction, as well as spaces separated by age group. Councillor Clear, herself a former nursery owner, cut the ribbon on a commemorative framed picture by the children. She said the early years sector had been through changes since her time, but some things stayed the same. Learning through play and having fun is still the aim, she told guests. I can still see the children are not only learning, but having a great deal of fun in this impressive nursery. I'm particularly delighted to see the imaginative use of garden space, which encourages the children into the fresh air all year round and whatever the weather. Quite apart from the health benefits, I believe imaginative play outside is fundamental to a child's learning and the development of their communication and planning skills. The mayor also met seven chicks hatched by the children. Maples Day Nursery's area manager, Faye Walker, said staff at the nursery serving children aged 6 weeks to five were delighted with the new facilities. We are continually looking at ways to improve the opportunities available to our children and looking forward to a new and exciting era at Maples, she said. The emphasis is always on fun and learning through play, whether it is at the very latest interactive smart board or at our growing beds, where children can pick up ideas in maths, science and environmental messages as they plant, tend and harvest flowers and herbs. Maples is owned by its employees under child-based partnership. Before launching her political career, Councillor Clear was a classroom assistant. She also ran Fairlands Montessori School, a rural preschool in Shedfield. It opened in 1997 and is now known as Fairfield's Day Nursery. Her relationship with childcare will continue into her mayoralty after she named the Naomi House and Jack's Place Children's Hospice among her chosen charities. Rowan Hospice in Waterlooville and Southampton's Countess Manbatten Hospice were also named as beneficiaries of Councillor Clear's fundraising.
Teenagers Cycle Cafe. A cycle cafe designed by teenage boys for a Winchester beauty spot appears closer than ever to becoming reality. The Handlebar Cafe would sit on the viaduct way between Garnier Road and St Catherine's Hill. Budding architects as young as 14 have impressed civic chiefs with their scheme, developed over almost a year with the charity Spud Youth, and are close to submitting an early version to city planners. The two-carriage model is designed to replicate two trains passing on the old railway and would have enough space for a cafe, balcony, outside seating and a bike repair shop. Around 30 representatives from charities, biking groups, colleges and Winchester City Council joined the youngsters at a presentation on Monday to see the proposals, which could also include a new footpath. Spud is in talks with several charities about running the cafe as a social enterprise, linking with local groups and college communities to provide work for young and disadvantaged people. Mark Drury, the director of the charity Spud Youth, said, "We don't want to do all of this work with all of these amazingly talented young people and then just hand it over to a commercial operator. We want to make sure it involves the community because it's been created by the community. It's looking like it's not a question of if it's going to happen. It feels more at the moment like when it's going to happen. And I think people have started taking ownership of it themselves locally." The youngsters said they've been inundated with positive comments and offers when they showed off the model at the Winchester Criterion bike event on Sunday. Introducing the plans at the exhibition, Nick Sangaris told the guests, "We want it to fit in with nature, so we'd look at putting in local plants that are low maintenance." Spud is looking to raise up to £250,000 to help fund the build, The idea's originator, Alex Grice, has already negotiated a half-price 4,000 deal for the carriage itself, an Eastleigh built model, currently working on the Dartmoor Railway.
Well, thank you, everyone. That concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Now, many apologies if you heard lots of background noise. The flat upstairs from our studio is being refurbished at the moment, and it's a little bit noisier than we would have liked, so apologies for that. Now, a reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number is 01962 870370. You can also give Irene a ring if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings. Her number again, 01962 870370. Many thanks to our editors, Liz and Gordon Legg, and our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you to our readers. Nikki?
Goodbye.
Graham?
Goodbye and apologies for the creaky voice this morning.
That's right. And John?
Bye-bye.
And goodbye from me, Peter. Do have an enjoyable week. Now, when you have finished with this week's recording, could you please put the memory stick in the wallet and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you, and until next week, goodbye.